Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:41 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is November 16th. Well, I thought I'd kick off with the Treasury future. It's up 19 points today, and we can see very clearly that there's been a huge downtrend over the course of the last 2 years, coming down from 140 to 110. So that's a big compression, and now we've got a reversionary rally underway. It looks at least likely that the price is going to go up to 115. That's the lower side of the overhead range. It might even fully unwind the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. So that would be a material rally, and it would begin to break the downtrend if it sustains the move up through 115. But it's not just US Treasuries. So there was exceptional bearishness related to gilts, and gilt futures also pulled back in an exceptional manner, but they're unwinding the short-term oversold condition. Now, in the UK's instance, this is more about the willingness of bond investors to think that the Bank of England is going to backstop the market and that the government are going to engage in fiscal austerity. And we'll have more details of that over the course of the next day and two. So I think that's rather important. Now let's think about Bund yield, Bund prices. So the future here is also very oversold and hasn't quite rallied as much. And part of the reason for that is the ECB is less aggressive in suggesting that they're close to the peak of their interest rate cycle. Inflation in Germany is running at over 10%. So we're not quite there yet, but certainly the price is rising. But I think it's particularly important to highlight the fact that we're in a rather different market environment right now, because there was a tendency to think that the stock market was going down because yields were rising. But yields are now coming down and stocks have stopped rallying. So we're in a materially different environment. So at the beginning of the year, stocks started rolling over because inflation was getting out of hand and central banks were raising interest rates. And they continued to raise interest rates to try and snuff out speculative activity, to kill off demand in the economy, and to snuff out some of the leverage. And that has been largely successful. But it also helped to, or it put downward pressure on stocks. Now we're in a different stage where slowing economic figures are beginning to become apparent. Inflationary pressures are beginning to moderate. But we have not yet seen a big rollover in corporate profits. So this, I think, is the next shoe to drop. And corporate profits going down, inflationary pressures rolling over, they raise the specter of deflationary forces. Well, deflationary forces tend to really favor bonds over equities, and if corporate profits roll over, then that's not positive for equities. So we're getting a divergence. Bonds are going up, equities are going down. This is more or less a return to the normal way of things. It's not normal that both bonds and equities would rise and fall together, which is what really characterized all of this year. So the Nasdaq 100 was down about 1% in here today. But it's also, I think, rather interesting to highlight what was up and what was down. Kraft Heinz, O'Reilly Automotive, those are, and Pepsi are really quite defensive companies. The ones that were negative, Lucid Group and Lam Research, semiconductors, electric vehicles. These are more very speculative type companies. But then you also have Nvidia among the bigger decliners in here as well, and Baidu and Pinduoduo, which were some of the biggest advancers over the course of the last few days, have now also started to roll over. And Pinduoduo, right from the upper side of this range, at least pausing here. Then let's think about the oil price. Well, if we're in an inflationary environment, it would be reasonable to anticipate oil prices should go up. If we're approaching deflation, that would imply less demand, and oil prices should go down. Now, the price is locked in this tight range between about $90 and $100, and that has been the case for nearly 6 weeks now. Now, it will not last indefinitely. The price is really up one day, down the next, or up for a couple of days, down the next couple. And until we get a clear breakout, then at this range will persist. But when the breakout occurs, it's likely to be exceptionally volatile. One thing that I think is rather relevant, though, is that we did have a sequence of higher reaction lows since the end of September, and it was broken earlier, at the end of last week. Whereas we still do have the sequence of lower highs or equal highs. So the consistency that was in the trend is not quite there any longer. And it would suggest that we're in a significant period of indecision. And when the decision is made, we're going to have some big trades that break out of this range. Then natural gas prices are steadier in the USA and up $20, excuse me, 20 cents in here today, and reversing an earlier decline. But then UK natural gas prices have been quite weak, and we've had a couple of different contract changes. There's a big step in the chart at the end of October, so that's inflating the price right now. But we did have a rebound for 2 days, and prices are starting to come back down. There was a rocket landed in Poland yesterday in a village and killed two people, and obviously that's a potential source of stress, but it does not look like NATO is about to invade Russia or escalate the geopolitical environment. As we think about the wider market, we're definitely getting a lot more variability in performance. And certainly some of the stocks that had rebounded are now beginning to roll over. Tesla has failed to push back above the $200 area, and Nvidia, which had a good-sized rally, has also begun to encounter resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. There was talk yesterday about Warren Buffett taking a position in Taiwan Semiconductor, and the share was in positive territory today, but it is encountering at least near-term resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. We've had a good-sized rally. A $20 rally on a $60 share is a 33% advance. So it's certainly enough to, I think, represent short covering, but after a 30% move, then you really do have to be very bullish to be the next buyer. Now, the biotechnology sector also has pushed up to the upper side of this range that's been forming for most of this year, but was in negative territory today. So we may get some additional pause and consolidation in this area as well. Now, when we think about China, obviously we've had the aftermath of the Party Congress and more dovish statements from Xi Jinping about supporting the property market, supporting the stock market, helping to support the economy, and also at least intimating that an invasion of Taiwan isn't imminent. So we've had also a good sized rebound in this CSI 300, and It hasn't quite yet been able to push up through the 4,000 level. And then the big question is, are we going to see continued waves of assistance because the renminbi was weaker in here today? So we've certainly seen downward dynamics on this chart over the course of just the last week or two. And that suggests that China doesn't want the renminbi to devalue on a day-by-day basis, and that they would be happier to see a gradual process of devaluation. But I do think that they do want a devaluation, and that they do want to squeeze liquidity out of the housing market without causing a crash. So it does, I think, the base case has to be that China will supply exactly enough liquidity to ensure that there's less risk of a crash, but not so much that there's going to be an inflation or a reflation of the bubble. And there are still going to be geopolitical tensions between China and everywhere else. So India is the big beneficiary of that, and the Nifty index is pausing here in the region of the 2021 peak, but this looks like a bullish consolidation overall. The Vietnamese market has been exceptionally weak for the last 2 months, but it rebounded in here today. So this was the first evidence of the government moving in to, in fact, support asset prices, and it had an upside key reversal. It's also worth highlighting that at the same time that the stock market has been selling down, the dong has depreciated this year by about 9%. So investors will be anxious to see that the dong's depreciation has ended, or at least that they're willing to support the currency around the 25,000 level. And that could easily ignite interest in the sector or in the country. The VanEck Vietnam ETF also put in an upside key reversal, or at least it's working on a weekly key reversal right now, and it's just about halved this year. So certainly at least the potential for a reversionary move here, and potentially better than that if the dong continues to pause. Well, if Brazil was in positive territory, or excuse me, Vietnam was in positive territory, Brazil was in negative territory, down nearly 3,000 points. So it is rolling over right now. There is some speculation that the Lula administration will be less aggressive in their spending measures, but they have appointed a significant number of people who cut their teeth in governance during Dilma Rousseff's reign. So that's not positive for the trajectory of governance, and the market is beginning to roll over here. So there's going to have to be remedial action politically, or we could see a significant deterioration in Brazilian assets because the real is back testing its sequence of higher reaction lows, shown inversely here, with the dollar posting a sequence of lower rally highs since the pandemic panic. That would suggest that a move up through 550 would signal a significant exit from Brazilian assets. So that's rather interesting here as we look at Petrobras, where they've just announced a significant dividend. They haven't paid it just yet, but the share is pulling back again, despite the fact that oil prices remain really quite firm. But they're going to pay a 15% dividend, and that is probably going to get taken out of the share price over the course of the next week. The record date will be exactly 1 week from now. Then Venezuela's Bolivar continues to deteriorate. And then let's think about the commodity complex more generally. We've had a really quite impressive rebound in the industrial metals over the course of the last 3 weeks. But the challenge here is that this price is not updated every day, or it's not updated on the day. And we had the nickel price, for example, reversing in here today, so coming back down. And the big question is, will it be able to hold this move out of the base formation? When we think about some of these industrial metal miners, then we do have a short-term overbought condition, and the BlackRock World Mining Trust was in negative territory in here today. So I think that we're not quite there yet. I think the industrial metal miners are beginning to give us an indication that they will be among the sectors that do best when this recession risk abates. But we're not quite there yet. And I think the yield curve spread gives us all the information we need to know. The spread is now negative by 66 basis points. And this is now approaching lows that really haven't been seen since the savings and loan crisis in the early 1980s. So that was a really significant liquidity event. We are definitely seeing some of the effects of liquidity, where we had the issue with the UK gilt market. Then we've had issues with the cryptocurrency markets and the bankruptcy of FTX, and still the potential for additional, I guess what you might refer to as afters, but it's contagion into other crypto exchanges. And of course, it gets right to the heart of the paradox of decentralized finance that you can have a limited supply asset like Bitcoin, and you can have a limited supply blockchain. But if you want to create a model of fractional reserve banking, then you basically have to lend assets you don't have and hope that you'll be able to cover the difference when they're called upon. And that's the issue that all of these exchanges have. Those that are not simply facilitating transactions, but attempting to leverage them. And this is all part of a crypto winter, but it's a broader reflection of liquidity getting siphoned out of the market. So then we can also look at corporates where they've issued perpetual bonds or they've issued perpetual shares. And usually that's on the understanding that on the first call date, they will bring them back in. And they will not then, I guess the understanding is that investors will buy the perpetual when it's issued, and they will expect to get their money back on the first call date. But the company, if they don't call it back, are then going to have to pay a higher dividend. But what it does to the investor is it lengthens the duration. And potentially an uncertain duration means that it messes with the math in their portfolios. So we've also seen that, and it's also a reflection of illiquidity. And we're starting to see these issues cropping up left and right. But we have not yet seen corporate profits rolling over. And there's certainly an argument that's circulating in the market right now about the fact that PE ratios are attractive at current levels. But if corporate profits go down, it means that those valuations will go up and will no longer be attractive. Then prices have to fall to become attractive once more. And that would be the third stage of a bear market. And we're not there yet, but it is in the future. The time to be most alert about selling pressure in the stock market is not when the yield curve spread is falling. It's usually when it is surging higher. So it was initially inverted in 2006, It didn't really start to trend higher until the middle of 2007, and by the time it was clearing the 100 basis point level, well, then that's when we had all the selling pressure. And very similar in early 2000, that's when the yield curve initially became inverted. By the time it was now trending higher again, well, then that's when we had most of the selling pressure. And the market didn't bottom until 2003, and that was also the peak of the yield curve spread. So, therefore, it is reasonable to conclude that markets don't bottom until the yield curve spread is somewhere up here, and even in this peak here, it was, I think, more of a reflection of the fact that we had exceptionally low interest rates, that we didn't have it go all the way back up. Well, now central banks have plenty of room to cut interest rates, and when this yield curve spread turns around, which means that the short end of the curve will be falling faster than the long end of the curve, then it will be in response to interest rates coming down, but that will be because the Federal Reserve is now worried about growth and the economic expansion. And that's in the future. So it's not really a time to be hyper aggressive in terms of purchases, but rather to bide one's time, because there will be extraordinarily attractive entry opportunities when the yield curve spread does in fact turn higher. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.